Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. Hey, I'm Dr. Lisa, and I give a shit, which is a hell of a lot more you can say about any of your fucking elected officials. Hey, any of you government employees out there that need a sandwich, this isn't even funny. It's not, this, you can't make fun of this, but I'm here for you. Send me a text and I'll send you, or whatever. Instagram, @DrLisaLevySP. You get a free sandwich, okay? I'm sorry. Anyway, so thanks for listening. So it's Radio Free Brooklyn. You know, we do all this for nothing, for no money. Not for nothing, for a lot, but no money. So I think you should go to our website and donate, because it's, you know what, you could give like $50 to some, you know, charity, but if you give us like $3, that will mean like as much as $1,000 to a regular big old charity. Seriously. So go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Okay, so I have to tell you about my guest today. My guest here is comedian and animator Manolo Moreno. Okay, so he's looking at me right now with this like, what are you going to say? What are you going to say about me? Look, now he's laughing. Now he's looking at me. Now he's laughing. No, okay. So here's the thing. You know me, right? I gush. So I'm a little awed by the talents of our very own Manolo Moreno here. He is both a animator and a comic, and he is like super funny and super original at both those things, and he combines them both together. And I was explaining to him that like it's really hard for me to explain his work because his work is really original. But on top of that, it's not that easy to find. It's not that easy to find. And this is what I really want to know about Manolo. And I have to look at this name every time because I've done this before to him where I've called him Moreno Manolo. And I have dyslexia and I know I'm going to do that on the air. Are you okay with that, Manolo? You forgive me in advance? He's giving me the thumbs up. Okay, got that out. Now I can relax now that we're good with that. But anyway, here's the thing about Manolo that I want you to know, and then I'm going to want you listeners to know. Manolo, you're listening in at the same time and hearing this. So he has like all these credits, and he has like, if I had that kind of talent and that level of talent, I would be like all over the place and I would have built an industry around myself by now. But with Manolo, it's hard to even like find the stuff because there's something really modest about him, or I don't know, but that's what I want to find out about him. Okay. So stick with me on that, but I'm going to tell you. So after searching and doing research on him, at the very end, at the bottom of his website, I find this paragraph that says, as a comedian, he's a co-host, blah, 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 this big show, Dr. Game Show on MMFU and Earwolf, but he's also performed at like, you know, all these other places, but his work has been featured on Vulture, IFC, Comedy Central, Sundance, New York Television. Like, he has all these credits and he fucking buried them. You know what I mean? So Manolo, what do you say about that?
Well, I don't know. Like, you know a lot of comedians, right? And yeah. Then they say, and what is that called when
credits? What are you gonna say?
It lists their names and then in parentheses after the name,
credits.
It's like a credit, right?
Yeah.
And it's like embellished, I guess, because it's like
embellished. You're worrying about embellishing your credits
because you know how people say like, oh, I was in Comedy Central, but it was just like I was like an extra in something kind of thing. Like,
oh,
I did like a Comedy Central thing, but that thing got buried. They buried it for me.
You're in the most cutthroat.
I'm in the wrong
industry. If you call it that,
life.
No, you're not. It's just like I got to find out why you're like that. But the thing is, okay. So Manolo and I were talking about how we could explain his work. So I saw his work for the first time maybe 2 years ago or something like this. And he just, I was there with my husband, Phil. Hi, Phil, if you're listening. And he's at work today. I don't know if he is. But we were blown away by the innovation and the quality and the thinking and the product, the execution and everything about his performance, which I'm going to have him explain to you in a minute. But I thought I would use that as a way, him explaining, Manolo explaining his thing that we saw that Phil and I are still talking about as a way to give you just a small idea about what kind of work he does. I've posted a lot of stuff on my Facebook page and stuff like that, so you can do your own research too. Okay, do your own fucking research. Go ahead, Manolo, tell us.
Well, can I talk about... I did two things.
No, you can't talk about anything you don't want.
It was at Lorelei's show, right?
It probably, yeah.
Yeah, and I did two things.
You tell us both, but okay, the thing that I had in mind was the when you did that really funny DJ thing. Okay, well, tell us both. Tell us both.
Sorry.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Well, the first thing was I was pretending I was a living statue.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It was that thing was originally done for like a music bit show, and I was trying to find a way to do a musical act without having to memorize anything. So I just wanted to do a thing where I just stood there and then had a track play over it where I'm singing about being a living statue and how hard it is and then someone dressed up as a bird was supposed to like poop all over me and. As this thing played, and that's it.
Yeah, no, it was fucking brilliant. I remember that now. That's so smart. That's like a really smart way to handle yeah. like control over. It was like
I'm not good at memorizing and stuff.
Me either. That's interesting. Okay.
So then the other one was, I guess the idea was like if you imagine like a turntable DJ, at a singer songwriter open mic. So I just built a turntable set out of cardboard. Like, I guess a lot of my pieces, at least back then, I can't believe I called it pieces, but
oh yes,
back then, like, you know, I have like I feel like I have to overcompensate with a lot of things because like I'm not one of those buzz people. So if
buzz people, what does that mean?
You know, like the popular kids.
Oh really? Okay.
So like I'm like, well, the thing about these shows is that I'm not saying the show I was doing in particular, but like other shows, like a lot of times it's a lot of work and then people don't put a lot of work into it. So it's like, well, I could maybe at least be in their memories if I put
right
twice as much work. So like, and I would just make props out of cardboard and stuff. And so like I made it a turntable thing and then, I just like had the tech play a thing where it was like I was scratching an acoustic song I wrote because I used to be a musician and it, you know, went into like some drum and
okay, can I let me put it to you this way. This is how I'm remembering it. I'm remembering it like no, but that helped me remember it at least. So anyway, it was basically watching Manolo being a DJ, but his DJ equipment was all like life-size cartoons, physical. Like he made a DJ setup out of like it looked.
It had moving parts and stuff.
Yeah.
The needle moved.
And so, because of the track and Manolo's performance, you felt like you were watching this guy really being a DJ, but it was it was hilarious. And here's the thing that I'm realizing now that you're explaining your work, which, and thanks for reminding me about that statue thing because it was awesome, is that the work is, I'm going to just say this again, I'm sorry for being gushy, but the work, because it's embarrassing to you.
Yeah. I don't know why I do this.
I know it's embarrassing, but this is why I personally like the work. The reason I personally like the work is because I think it's super conceptual. And I like the idea of combining like the visual and the headline like we used to do in advertising, like the idea of the two mediums making, you know, sound or whatever, and audio you know, a literal thing and a visual thing together that makes a bigger idea, and the way that it's thought out. So, which also makes it hard to explain. Okay, so there, that's the deal. Do your own fucking research. Go to... do you have another thing you want to tell us about?
I wonder if that's why, because like you said, you had an advertising background. I had a short stint as an illustrator, and I worked for an illustrator, and I wonder if like a lot of the editorial, it has a lot of conceptual.
Yeah, editorial. Who did you work for?
An illustrator named Fernanda Cohen. She was like my mentor. She has since moved back to Argentina, but.
No, but I actually studied illustration in college. That was something I had a fantasy about doing, and it's a really hard gig.
Yeah.
And if you can, yeah, I mean, it's a great.
The difference, though, is like, at least in, I hate the idea of networking, but at least in networking, it's like, it's fun because people are like fun and funny, whereas like in design and illustration, it's like they're not necessarily.
Oh. Deadly.
Fun.
Sorry. You mean comedy people are like at least fun. That's what you meant. Comedy people. Is that what you're talking about?
Is that what did I say?
You said networking and I didn't know what you meant.
Oh, yeah. I meant comedy.
Comedy networking is more fun than illustration networking. Yes. I've done both.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, you have to learn how to riff or something. I don't know.
No, I get it. Yeah, I get it.
Instead of like passing out your like postcard or whatever of your work.
Oh, Jesus.
And stuff.
Jesus, I know. I know. I get it. You know, the communities are really a big part of it because I've networked with so many different communities, theater communities, art communities. But then in the art communities, there's the painting community, and then there's the, you know, conceptual and the this and the so funny community. Yeah, community, because the community experience is a big part of the field that you're in, right?
Yeah.
It's rough. Yeah. So. Okay. So I want to ask, guys, Manolo this question. This is really scary for me. Okay. So when I first met Manolo, I really wanted him to be on the show. Actually, I got to know him. I wanted to put this in there. I got to know you a little bit better because, Colby Smith, who is a host of another show here, People's Young Persons Radio, which is Sunday mornings. Great show. Yeah. Colby's a comedian and he knew Manolo and we booked him on a show that we did. So I got to know you a little bit better.
Oh yeah.
And Colby also was like, oh, he's great. And I was like, I don't know. He doesn't want to be on my show, you know? So anyway, so the first time I asked you to be on my show, I didn't really know you. He's hiding behind. This is so awkward. He's hiding behind his t-shirt in front of me, guys. I live for the awkward, right? And so anyway, so why did you not want to be on that show, on my show? And I don't blame you. I mean, I totally.
Oh, I mean, I feel like I've listened to an episode maybe. And then like, it was very, you really got in there.
Oh, you had?
Yeah, after you asked. And then I was going through things that I didn't want. Getting
It was the timing.
It was the timing, yeah. My mom passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Oh, that makes so much sense.
You heard my set on your show. I was like, oh, well, at least I have like this cathartic method, you know, this way of, you know, dealing with it. And then like, you know, I could do it in that way. But yeah, it was just.
Oh, you know. This is what I'm talking about. This is my countertransference, my neurotic countertransference. So I'm like, either you didn't hear it and you just heard shitty things about me, or you did hear it and you thought it was stupid. See, that's how I internalized all that. So thank you. I'm so glad I was clear. You actually heard it and didn't want to be on it because it was, well, that's kind of a I'm going to say that makes me feel a lot better. Let's just put it that way. I'm glad we had this chat. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay. Work that out. So back to my psychological theory about you, Manolo, which is why I'm trying to figure out like why you aren't running a corporation.
I think about that all the
Manolo.
Time. I'm like getting by the skin of my teeth. And I'm like,
no, but you should be running. I think it's something in your personality. And I think that it's whatever, like, it makes you, whatever it is, I know you're an incredibly likable guy and you're doing a lot of great work and all that. So none of this matters. You wouldn't be doing good work if you were running, if you were like a Steve Jobs type, you would not be doing the work you're doing. So
I suppose.
But I, and a lot of this is counter transference of mine because I'm like in, like a little bit in awe of all your talent. So I want to know, like, I'm so insecure and I'm on, you know, I'm complaining about social media on Facebook, if you didn't notice. Like, I hate doing all that, and I get that, but I just think, like, I would have such an easy time making a creative career work if I had your skills. So that's, it's really, like, me being neurotic.
Yeah,
so, but I do want to find out, like, what your story is. So you have Filipino parents.
Yeah.
And you... Tell me how your parents came here and how you grew up a little bit.
Okay. Well, my parents moved here in the 70s to New York, mm-hmm. and then had two kids,
mm-hmm.
and then moved to Pennsylvania and had three more kids. So I'm like the exact middle child. So I have that syndrome.
Wow. So you grew up with five kids?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, these days, I guess.
Your parents, where did you live in Pennsylvania? You said, wait, they had three kids?
In Pennsylvania.
And then they moved to?
Or two kids, two of my older sisters, they had, like, in Manhattan and Brooklyn, and then me and this. And
after they left Manhattan, yeah. Brooklyn, they moved to Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So how did they wind up, how do two... Filipino people, how does a Filipino couple wind up in Manhattan or Brooklyn or which part?
Oh, well, my dad's, I forget what the exact deal was, but yeah, he ended up being a doctor.
He's a doctor. Your father's a doctor.
Yeah. And then he, got a residency here.
Oh. And how about your mom? What did she do?
She's a slick.
Or what did she do? Oh my God. This is why I didn't want to be on. No, I'm just kidding.
She's just a housewife.
She was just a housewife, but anyway, she must have been pretty young, right?
What do you mean?
When she passed away.
Yeah, 60-something.
Oh.
I'm not good with numbers, but yeah, 60-something.
Yeah, so tragic. Yeah. But are you close with your brothers and sisters?
It ebbs and flows, I guess. Like, you know.
Was your family able to support each other through it? Was it?
Oh, yeah. So yeah, we were like a, yeah.
That was a good time that you had a big, it was good that you had a big family at that time?
Yeah. I mean, there was some other drama, you know, mm-hmm. you know, substance abuse related drama in the mm-hmm. family. So like.
Mm-hmm. That made it harder.
It made it harder. But, yeah.
And how is your dad doing?
He's fine. I mean, I guess it's not as good to talk about, but I suspect that he might be a little bit a smidge on the spectrum. So it's like
a little autistic. You mean what spectrum? Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, I don't want you to talk about it. I'm just asking because
he's in good form. He's okay.
He's okay. Yeah, an emotional guy? An unemotional guy? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to communicate?
Basically, yeah.
So he doesn't feel a lot. He doesn't express a lot, or maybe he doesn't feel a lot.
I mean, you know, I could see the love and all that, but yeah, he's capable of moving on, I guess. No. I mean, you know,
he's practical, and he's probably a really hard worker.
And hard worker.
I mean, he's probably, like, what he does is very... consuming. It's not a distraction.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
real people. What does he have a specialty or?
He's an anesthesiologist.
Okay, well, that's like a pretty big focus thing. Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of those people where like you read like the latest things in health or whatever, and then so like he's if you keep working, it keeps your mind sharp kind of thing.
Yeah, he keeps up on, and that's a really, it's a very
really
like specific detail kind of thing. You have to, it's like being a pilot. It's like if everything goes right, no problem. But if something
Take
goes
naps.
Wrong, it's intense, right?
I suppose.
Yeah. So how did you guys grow up? So it was two older sisters, you two younger, and then who's the younger ones?
A brother and then a sister.
So two boys.
Two boys.
Uh huh. And are you closest to one or the other or any of them in particular?
I'm not close. Oh,
you guys aren't close at all. None of you.
Well, we're not like tight. Like I was tight with one, but then that's when you deal with someone with, you know, drug abuse.
Yeah, sure.
So like we kind of fell apart, but you know, yeah. we're not like on. I don't know. I'm not good
it's
at.
It's just not a day to day thing. Yeah. Or it's like some, yeah.
I mean, you know, so it's the thing when like you go to someone, you go to a city, mm-hmm. and then like someone, and then you go back home, and then like sometimes you have a friend who's mad at you that was like, why didn't you tell me you were in the city? And it's like, well, I had a thing to do. It's kind of like that where it's like,
right.
We have this, you know, we're family and we're not tight. Like,
but no one lives near you. None of them live near you.
I have two sisters here.
Oh, so do you see them? Do they come to your shows?
No. The one sister was, two of her kids were guests on Dr. Game Show.
Oh, so that was a cool thing. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
My niece was able to hang out with Jason Mantzoukas.
Oh, nice. It's like a thing. So I'm trying to figure out what being brought up in a Filipino family. I want to hear about the move to Pennsylvania too, and I want to hear a little there's got to be a cultural difference with your parents being from a different culture, and our American experience here. So I want to hear how that might have shaped you, but also how did you get to Pennsylvania? What happened? They were living here, or
I don't know. I think.
Where in Pennsylvania?
I have no idea. Well, it's like a small white town called Williamsport.
And it's all a small white people town?
I mean, there's like segregated neighborhoods, like kind of unofficially.
Were there other Filipinos?
Here and there, yeah. Not as much, though. But yeah.
So that's where you grew up pretty much, Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
So what's different about if you were brought up in a Filipino household, what might be different?
Like I kind of don't know because like my dad, so like we grew up Catholic and there's a huge Catholic scene in the Philippines, but my dad was always like a black sheep, like he didn't believe in like, you know, you know, kind of like tribalism kind of stuff and like, you know, mm-hmm. black sheepy kind of stuff. Kind of like a rebel kind of.
Yeah, he didn't want to go with the program.
Yeah, go with the program.
He wanted to make his own program.
Yeah. And like, yeah, so I guess we're in the same vein as far as like.
And you're like that.
Yeah, but he was more science and I'm more like arts and stuff. So that's where we both.
Do you think being a doctor in the Philippines, that would probably give you more freedom, personal freedom in the sense that, you know, you have more whatever, more flexibility in your life, probably just you're specialized and value, you know, maybe that's partly part of it, or
I think
more freedom.
I don't
or
know
what about him, I should just ask that openly. What about him do you think, what about him
he was
makes
like
him makes you think that he's a rebel?
I think
a rebel.
So like,
word.
I think it's just a lineage thing. Cause like his grandfather came out of a small town and like he made his way, like he thought out of the box and like paid for, like he got, it's like a tiny village and
wow.
I think there's like, I don't know, like 11 kids or some crazy amount of numbers. And then like he was the first person to like get his like two daughters through college kind of
wow.
thing. And so it was like celebrated in the village kind of
wow.
thing. So it's just like, and then like there's always like this go, like, you know, as like the genes dispersed, I guess, like mm-hmm. there'd be some sects where there'd be like, you know, just kind of contrarian. And mm-hmm. so, like, you know, I don't know. Everyone, I don't know. I think I came from the group that just wanted to go against the grain. And
So was that approved of in your family or encouraged then?
In the grand, in my immediate family?
Yeah, in your, you know, growing up in your household.
Oh, not. He was very hands off, I guess.
It so he like gave you a lot of freedom.
Yeah. So yes.
Mm-hmm. So what were you like in high school? Let's find that out. Went to high school in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I think.
And were you in a suburban town or a small town?
It was like a small suburban town that's like surrounded by the sticks. So like, mm-hmm. you know, I had like, you know, I don't know. So like I would go to a bar in the sticks with a friend.
At your age in high school?
21 or something.
You were not but like 21
after,
in high school.
After high school, you know, whatever.
Oh,
but
older,
like,
but.
You know, like, you know, there's like racism and stuff depending on where you're at.
Okay, so you're Filipino. How was that regarded in your school?
It's ultimately fine. You just, you know, have to deal with certain weird.
But
comments
did you?
And jokes
were you?
I was.
Were you conscious of it? Were you very conscious of it, or
not as much? I was just trying to get through the day. You know, uh-huh. I'm like a very tired person. Like,
you're tired.
I'm like someone. I was talking to a girl I was classmates with, and I was like trying to. I was like, I don't really remember a lot of high school, and she's like, "You slept through most of it. Like
really?
You always had your head down."
Did you get up early?
You know, I made it to school on time.
No, but I mean, were you staying up late or?
Oh, I was probably a night owl. Yeah.
Do you think that, so here's Dr. Lisa for you.
Okay.
Do you think that maybe you were trying to avoid your classmates by putting your head down?
I think just by nature, I think, so if I were to think, I think I was just born very sensitive. So like everything like hits me harder.
You mean what people say or like loud noises or all
not,
of that?
Not loud noises. I'm fine with loud noises. But just like, you know, everything's taxing. So yeah, like I guess like, and then like I just get these like, what do you call it? I don't know. I just get very sleepy. So like maybe the tiredness came from like, trying to like detach from my surroundings or something. Mm-hmm.
Well, also like you sound like
I'm kind of daydreamy too. So like I kind
you
of
sound like an
intro,
like a real introvert.
Yeah.
I have no training. You know this, right? Okay.
Yeah.
No psychological training. So I'm just talking out my ass. But, so
like
I sound
introvert.
Like you are a real introvert in that like you get like tired by other people's presence.
Yeah, I'm like
that happened.
I think, like, I forgot. I told someone that like hanging out with people is like traveling, and then hanging out with certain people is like going to Mars, where it's like you want to take a nap afterwards.
Oh,
like,
I see.
I don't know.
Do you like being alone a lot? Is that your preference?
I like balancing it. Like, I like socializing, like kind of like having conversations in a booth or something kind of.
Mm-hmm. A few people, not, you yeah. You go to parties.
Here and there,
but you're not like, oh, great, a party?
It depends. I don't know.
Depends, of course. So, what else? There was something I was going to ask you. Oh, girls. I can never. I have the worst gaydar or sexual, whatever it is. Are you straight? You're hetero. Yeah. So, have you had any girlfriends? Girlfriends in high school? Girlfriends as an adult? We don't have to talk about today now.
Right. Yeah, here and there. Like, I don't know. I guess I'm picky.
Have you had any long term relationships?
The longest were like 2 years. They would just cap off at 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's I don't know, being an Asian guy. I did better in my 20s. And that.
Huh. You know, that's so interesting how you're talking about that, because, like, I don't know. I can imagine a lot of girls being like thrilled to, you know, be going out with you. But the way you put it was, I did better in my 20s, which is so funny, because from my point of view, what I'm thinking is that says that you are evaluating about how girls feel about you. Which seems ridiculous to me, because it's like, you're adorable. And you have so much going for you. But you mean you're not, do you?
No, it'd be nice.
Do you make efforts? Nice. Like, do you do any of that shit? Do you like ask, like, girls out? Do you go on, not Tinder, or do any of that? I'm so old. Apps?
Do you do, I don't any of those do apps? The apps. Mm-hmm. I think I'm like, you kind of have to know me first. So it's, and I don't like how it messes with your head. I don't know.
I can see that.
I was on it for like 5 seconds and I was like,
yeah, it's like fucked up.
I felt my brain changing and I didn't want my brain to change.
People as commodities a little bit.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And so I feel like that made things hard. And like, it's, I don't know, the older I get, putting the effort into finding people is harder. So, but, you know, I don't know.
I imagine that, like, you would do well if some chick that seemed really cool came up to you and wanted, you're the kind of guy that people would be asking out, and that would be best. What do you think?
Wait, what did you say? I'm sorry.
I'm putting out this alert to all the women out there that they're the ones who have to make the effort, man. That they should be surrounding you. They should be going to your shows and, right, like, trying to, like, get to know you. Oh, no, sure. But I think, like, you seem like the kind of guy that you might do well with somebody made the effort with you, with somebody that was appealing to you.
These days, probably. I don't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're not thinking about it a lot. You're busy. Yeah. Right? Is that right? I got the feeling you're not thinking about it a lot.
Here and there. I don't know. It's just, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm busy. I don't know.
Okay, so I want to tell people about the after school program that Radio Free Brooklyn has.
Sure.
It's this really great program. By the way, thank you for listening. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on every Thursdays, 2 to 3. I am in a session with this really brilliant and talented young man, Manolo Moreno. He's a great animator and comedian. Manolosomething.com if you want to look into his, do your fucking research. So anyway, what you should do is go and find out about our after school program, radiofreebrooklyn.org/afterschool. Either make a donation. You can sign up your teen, or if you're a teen and you're cutting school listening to this, you can sign up too. Get something done. Don't just hang out and smoke pot with your friends, okay? This is really cool and worthwhile, I'm telling you. Anyway, so check us out, okay? It's a brand new program. It got written up on, or got like shown, demonstrated on Brooklyn News, Channel 12. Check us out. Okay, thanks. Okay. So I want to know what your relationship with your mother was like.
It was weird because, like, she has that personality where I feel like for the past, I don't know, 15 years maybe, she felt more like my child.
What does that mean?
She had a very, like, naive, innocent vibe to her. Like, if you believed in, like, reincarnation, maybe she was a child of mine. Or, I don't know, something like, she had, like, a young spirit to her.
Okay, so your parents are Filipino. Did she, like, I imagine in other cultures, they don't have as many obnoxious women like me.
I mean, she was
kind of, was she a passive, woman that you might, like, is the cultural, like, I'm making this all up and projecting it and assuming it, but... And it's kind of racist, actually, but to be honest.
It's fine, I don't.
But I'm imagining that maybe, like, from her background, that women and, you know, her age and stuff like that, that women were just in much more traditional passive female roles, especially the wife of a doctor. Do you think that's maybe part of that? Or does she fit into that idea that I put out there?
I think tradition, I don't know, I think it, you know, it's one of those things, you meet enough people, then you see the variety of it. But my mom in particular, I just told someone the other day that, like, I remember that she said that when she was a kid, she would stare out the window wishing she was a princess.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, my dad found her, I forget, through friends, but she was, like, a beauty queen at the time and stuff like that. So,
literally?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, like, she was, she knew what she was going for. She had that, you know, I want to be a princess kind of.
So was she really beautiful?
Sure, yeah.
I mean, she must have been when she was young, but was that, like, part of her identity throughout her life?
I guess there is an emphasis on it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Did your sisters feel that pressure, or they're probably gorgeous too?
Yeah.
Is female beauty a big part of your childhood?
No, but one person went for it.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
Pursued modeling and stuff like
one
that.
One of your sisters.
Yeah.
So, but like I'm picturing like a passive, and this is so.
But she was like, she was like, you know.
Did she go to college?
I think so. Yeah.
Did she have interests outside?
She taught.
Parents?
She was a teacher. Mm-hmm. And she was very you know, I mean, she was. I feel like she was very critique-y.
What is that? In what way? About what?
So, like, if you wanted to do the psychology thing, she was like the, you know, I grew up feeling like I didn't do anything right.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
So, like, that's the other thing. Like, I didn't like cooking in front of her because, like, there's, you know, I don't like, and it carries on to my adulthood. I don't like doing things in front of people.
Oh, there we go.
I had to analyze myself.
So, in other words, but it also sounds like she was really, I'm just going to use the word overbearing. My mother was really overbearing.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm going to use that word. Back. I mean, with no disrespect, she obviously made some, you know, I mean, no disrespect at all. But I'm wondering if you felt her presence sort of critique. Was she like, did she critique like, oh, don't hold, you know, really little things about your stuff, you were doing?
I try to keep on. I was never one of those people that wanted like their parents to go to the games kind of thing or the plays or whatever. So I kept my art separate from them. Like I got a lot of shit from them for pursuing the arts until they kind of gave up. Well, that's all he could do. So I'm just going to back off.
Did your other brothers and sisters, were they academic, I mean, achievers in a way that they understood better?
Only one probably went through the school thing, like graduate school and four-year college. Mm-hmm. Most of us dropped out. I didn't go to a four-year college.
Did you study art?
I took a two-year program that taught me how to use computer programs like the Adobe, like Photoshop stuff. Yeah,
graphic design program,
animation, and that gave me a good.
Did you have good grades in school or?
No, it was one of those things where I was like naturally smart, but then as I got older, like so I didn't have like any discipline as far as studying goes. Mm-hmm. So like all of a sudden everything became harder, and like I didn't have the discipline to prepare for that kind of thing. So I had good grades up to, like, maybe high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
And what about your dad? What was your relationship with him like?
We butt heads a lot. I mean, you know, I love him, but, yeah, it was just, because we're, and he was very into debating and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, really? That's interesting. Verbal sparring, if you will.
Verbal sparring. And then, like, I grew up kind of like, you know, trying to, you know.
Avoid that.
I used to be into it, but then, like, as an adult, I don't, and, like.
How do you feel about his sparring? Do you think he was trying to connect, or do you think maybe he was just trying to have an intellectual exchange, or was it an angry feeling? What kind of feeling? How do you process
like,
that?
It's like, mostly like an intellectual sparring type of thing, because like him and his brother, he would say like him and his brothers would argue at the dinner table all the time, and like sometimes they would just take the opposite point of view just so they could have the sparring thing. But
but maybe that's exhausting for you.
It eventually became exhausting, yeah. But like, yeah,
I think so. I'm gonna say you sound like you were avoiding your parents for rational reasons.
I think I was avoiding everybody.
Well, after, yeah, I mean, that would be a good starting point, your parents. What about, and so what was their relationship like? Was your father, were they, like, I'm projecting that your father might have not treated your mom like an equal. I don't know why, but maybe I'm wrong.
Was it like? Not so much not an equal, but like utilitarian.
In a practical manner?
In a practical manner.
Was he cold? Or distant?
This is a thing that I picked up. But it's like, you know, I'm not publicly, he's like cold and distant. But like, you know, privately, he's like very affectionate. And I think I'm kind of like that.
Mm-hmm. And how was their relationship? How did they get along?
It was like functional. But yeah, like, so like, I don't know, when I was a kid, I just remember that they would just like lounge around in bed and like hang out and have fun, you know, with the kids, and everyone's just like hanging out. But like, you know, the past, like, when, you know, when we grew up, it's just, you know, they had this routine where, like, you know, mom cooks, he comes from home from work, watches Fox News kind of thing. And
Fox News.
And so like,
Catholic.
Yeah. But yeah, it was like a functional thing. You know, he said he truly loved her, stuff like that. But
yeah,
you know, I think there's whatever. It doesn't matter.
But, so yeah. They didn't seem really affectionate.
Not. I'm sure they were in private.
Yeah, like, it sounds like,
because I understand how he functioned as a
right. So it sounds like you think that they were really close. That they were close in a way that just.
They were a team.
That you didn't see. And they were a team to hear. Yeah. It's good to hear. That's good to hear. So here's what I'm sort of like processing right through now. Now this is what I'm thinking. So I'm thinking about how you had an overbearing, this is just, you know, an overbearing critical mom who watched, not even the criticalness, but just the like noticing all the details and commenting on them, and a lot of times negatively.
Yeah.
And then a father that wants.
He was the same too.
He was like that too. And then they both want to argue. Or he wants to argue. I'm sorry. I meant they both are like that. He wanted to argue, which makes people seem so tedious. Jesus.
Yeah, there's that.
Oh my God. That would make people seem really tedious to me. And it's also interesting that you're drawn to comedy and comedians, because those people put all the energy out there and they're like, they appreciate you. I'm certain of that, but you don't have to show off and be the star. And so it's kind of comfortable, right?
It is, but like, there came a point where I realized I have to like make a name for myself. So
I'm glad to hear you say that, because so the whole thing is that, so this is what my original thesis was about. I have a big paper on it, by the way.
Oh boy.
I'll be publishing it in the psychological journal soon. Perfect. So if you guys want to, so I think it's about 500, it's around 500 pages.
Oh, nice.
So what I'm thinking is that, okay, so my counter transference onto you is that you have all this talent and you know it, and you don't have to, you know, you're like cool being in the background. But now I'm wondering if you would like to leverage some of that more. And how do you, like, without being modest, you know you have marketable skills. And I don't mean marketable in the money sense. I mean marketable in, like, that people want to engage them. Probably more than, you could have a big engagement of whatever. I believe you would have a big, I've seen enough crap out there. You could have a much bigger engagement than you have if you did little, if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Do you want to? Is that something you're interested in? Do you feel like you're holding yourself back, or am I just projecting that on you?
I think growing up feeling like I can't do things right is like big part of it. So like, and I never learned how to be popular. So like, I'm slowly trying to work that in, mm-hmm. but it's like a slow process.
Sure.
Can
I ask you how old you are?
Right now?
Mm-hmm.
38.
Wow. You look like you're like 29. He's very young looking.
Thanks. But
very young. Great shape.
Thanks. But.
And mature. He's 20.
Yeah.
What did you say? 30?
38.
Wow. Yeah.
I know a thing or two.
Yeah.
No, but.
And he's going to be big after this show. We are working on it. He is going to be so. He's going to be really, really big.
But,
not that he's not, but go ahead.
But yeah, it's like that thing where like you get a taste of like the industry and it's like, and like, because I'm not like a buzzworthy person, I'm like, oh, you could easily be dismissed. Like you're easily dismissed. And it's like, oh, I have to start working on this.
Well, it's not a matter. I think, well, that doesn't matter. I mean, I don't think you have to change anything if you're not. I think you're doing great. But like the thing is, buzzworthy person. You've said that a couple of times and I don't know what that means and why you're not. You are a buzzworthy person.
I don't know.
So what does buzzworthy mean to you?
I think and I don't hold this against anyone, but it's just like you hear like industry people talk. It's like, oh, I heard about this guy. Let's see them do this or whatever. And like, you know, people want to plant their flag in you kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, that person had a weird name. So I checked them out and it's like, great. You're good at finding, you know, it's just like there's like that. And like, I don't know.
But do you, I mean,
you hear people talking about other people kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think people are talking about you. And I think I think more than you may realize. I think that happens to a lot of those people. Don't you ever talk to like, you know, somebody that like you think that they are everywhere and then they're like, what? They isn't it often that people don't think that they are being talked about? That are like that they don't know how well they're doing.
Maybe. oh boy.
Okay. So this is what I'm. Wait.
Oh, we didn't talk about how we met.
How did we meet?
Oh, wait. It was at that show, but like I would always see you around Pine Box all the time.
Is
that your go to drinking?
Oh, you saw me around Pine. Oh, yeah. We did run into each other a couple of times.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Changing subject. Interesting. What does that mean? Yeah, Pine Box is
my
go-to place.
The hour's winding down.
Yeah. Oh, what does that mean?
I was just like, going through the talking points.
Oh, you wanted to get that in. Good. Yeah, because I am there sometimes with my tiny dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my big husband.
Can I ask you questions?
Sure.
Or are we out of time or whatever?
No. I'm just trying to process this. I think that
I'm an interviewer too, you know.
I know, but I'm trying to get to the, I'm just, all I'm saying is I can see how if you want, I think that you could be holding yourself back if you feel like you're holding yourself back because of how your conditioning with your parents and
just, you know, the social circles.
Are you aware of that?
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Like, yeah, I feel like I grew up kind of invisible. So like, yeah.
But I think that what I wanted to say was that I think that you are mistaken about how you're being perceived. And that I think a lot of times people are buzzing about you or do want to buzz about you. But like, I mean, like even inviting you on the show, I'm so glad you did it. But I was like, I was nervous about it. I was like, because I hate being rejected like everybody else. And I was like, oh, Manola, well, he doesn't need to be on the show. He's got this. He's got that. That's how I mean, fuck it. I can handle the rejection. It worked out great. But that's what I'm just telling you, that I think you are misreading the crowd in that sense.
Oh, that makes me uncomfortable.
Why?
I don't know. I never liked being talked about.
Anyway, you've got some big ego issues, which... Which we could work on if you wanted to, but I mean, you know, another time. Okay. But anyway, I'm your fan, as you know, and I encourage you. So go ahead. What were you going to ask me? Oh, back to me. You couldn't take the attention. You had to put it on me.
Yeah, you're an artist.
Visual artist? Yeah, I guess.
You've been... how long have you been in New York?
Since 19, on and off my whole life, except for 10 years, 8 to 18, where I was in the suburbs of New York, of Philadelphia. What did I just say? I lived in Manhattan and Stuyvesantown until I was 8. I'm 62 as I... So I was born in 1956, and I lived in Stuyvesantown. We moved when I was 8 to the suburbs of Philadelphia, and then I moved back to New York in 1978, and I've lived here since then.
Always pursuing the arts, always doing the art thing.
Well, you know, I really wanted to be an art director. I wanted to be like a big, fancy art director working on TV commercials.
Totally. That's a romantic career.
Yeah, and I see myself as a pretty big... I mean, I did make a living at it, which I give myself credit for, but I did not fulfill my fantasies at all.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's better as a fantasy, maybe.
Well, I don't think I have... I think it was... not the best match. I think it was a good match in some ways. I got a lot out of it, but I think that I don't think a lot of people working in it really enjoy it. I think it's a really hard way to make a living, and I think if I had balls, I would have pursued something that was more me.
Yeah. I think I relate to that.
Yeah. But I didn't.
No, that's cool.
I wanted health insurance, and I'm glad I did it. Good discipline.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. No, yeah, I'm just like, I feel like there's a good chance that the rest of my life would probably like map out to be similar to yours, maybe. Just being an eccentric New Yorker type, I don't know.
I think that your life to me, like I feel like you already have the foundation that I wished I had when I was your age. Because when I was 38, that's like when I first started making my own work, just by accident, kind of.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I started, I was doing headline. I mean, art advertising was very conceptual, so I started taking, like, I learned a lot about type, and I started putting type on objects, like,
as like a personal project.
Yeah, and then I started selling them at museum stores or little art stores, and I was like shocked that, and they started doing well. And then I got in a bunch of shows, and I was actually in this really big show. With a lot of really well-known artists, right around 9/11, the opening was Thursday, and I had been in a bunch of shows, and I'd been doing really well, and this was a great show. It was like this four-year project called The Stealing Project, where I stole things everywhere I went, and then it was in a big display case, and it was all like cataloged.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a really cool project, and I was in the show with Sophie Kahl, who's super famous, and some other equally well-known artists, and it was like huge, and I got this big shout out on ArtNet immediately, like the next day, and it was like, I was like all, things were going well, and then what happened was 9/11 happened, and so it was at Artist Space, and they closed. Most things that were relevant before creatively just didn't seem meaningful in any way after that. You know what I mean? You can't look at it the same way, same week as 9/11. Were you even alive? Yeah.
I was outside the Holland Tunnel when it happened.
Oh, you're kidding.
But how I went through this, 21.
Yeah.
I went through the same thing. I was like getting ready to start my graphic design career. And I'm like, I was going through the exact same thing. It's like, what is this? Like all, it was just like, my pursuits are garbage kind of thing.
Well, I mean,
but you
it
were
was
in
most,
the arts.
Well, but, well, I was also working as an art director. I mean, that was really what I was doing. What happened was that I felt I had, when I look back at that period, I had a little bit of momentum in my art career, and I'd actually done this great piece that I'd spent 4 years on that basically just the whole thing just collapsed, the whole, like, if you call it a career or a trajectory, it just collapsed. And at that same exact time was exactly the same time that I did Psychotherapy Live, and that was the first time. It was like I got a monthly show right away. I started, that was like a month before I'd done that show, or I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was like the same time. And then because I was working as an art director, I only have a certain amount of time, but I wound up going down that road of being the shrink. And then I never really went back to the art thing till much later again. And
that's hilarious.
So it got like,
but, I moved to New York to try to be like a painter slash like indie musician.
Oh, indie musician. Yeah.
Like, I wanted to be like the next Beck kind of person, but, but that's interesting. Like what you, like all the skills that you obtained through, advertising. Yeah. It's like you were able to get into the art scene, like that whole networking thing. It's like,
well, that's funny.
That's
that
a good foundational thing. Like you said.
No, I mean, if you think, I mean, you think being an art director helped make an art career? No.
You don't think so? Like, you talked to the right people.
Oh, no.
How'd you get any, like, you knew curators?
Kinda? No. Well, I mean, No, because art and art direction, advertising, right. You cannot be out as an art director, as an artist, if you're an art director in advertising. They don't want to know about it. You will get fired if they think you have some other interest. And then there's no art people in advertising. There are very few artists or people interested in art. People even know anything about art.
I know a lot of illustrators who think that they're artists.
Well, that's very different. And some of them are.
Yeah, some of them are.
And some art direct. Yeah, I mean, you know, artists are in every field as far as I'm concerned, but... No, there. That's
you had that practicality of approach.
I've always been really practical, to my charm and my downfall. I don't know. I think honestly, it's like any other field. The longer you make stuff and put it out there, the more people you get to know.
Yeah, I guess I'm slow. Like,
do you want to do art, visual art? You'd be great.
Yeah, I came in wanting to be a painter, and then I gave that up.
So what kind of paintings? Are they similar to your animations?
Some of my early animation had some of my paintings, but like, you know, figurative. It was ultimately boring, but it's like a version of figurative, like, painting.
See, I think you could take all those skills and try and put them in the art world, and you'd be a star. Why don't you do that? They would love you.
The art world is a whole other political scene. It's like, right? Isn't it like, it's its own world.
Well, you're asking me. I mean, what do I know?
It's its own world.
Well, I was involved in, I did a show for a while that I got to know a bunch of people.
Like I could technically be in the show probably eventually, but it would be irrelevant in the art world.
Technically be in what show?
An art show or whatever.
I don't think it'd be that hard for you,
right? But it would still be, it would be like irrelevant, like it's not gonna
irrelevant in what way? Not like you, I mean, making money is hard.
Like it wouldn't be relevant to the art world.
Whereas, I think it would be,
but whereas like in comedy, like a lot of, you know, come from like, you know, little truths or like cathartic things, and I feel like it's more impactful, not in the scene overall, but like, you know.
Well, do you know David Shrigley's work?
No.
We're gonna have to talk about this after.
Thanks for squeezing my questions in.
No, I appreciate that. That's very, very that made me feel that's very nice. That was a lovely exchange.
I learned a lot too.
And you know what? Stick around, folks. We've got Elon Danziger, Lost and Rewound. We've got Rob Pritchard. We've got Tom.
Dr. Lisa gives a shit about